الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and we're with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll be discussing the commentary of the 23rd chapter of the Holy Quran, Suratul Mu'minun, or the Believers. Now let's just listen to the related verses, and then we'll be back. So stay with us.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
بل قلوبهم في غمرة من هذا ولهم أعمال
But their hearts are covered with confusion over this, and they have evil deeds besides disbelief which they are doing.
Brothers and sisters, we are now into the 63rd verse of the chapter. بَلْ قُلُوبُهُمْ فِي غَمْرَةٍ مِّنْ هَذَا وَلَهُمْ أَعْمَالٌ مِّنْ دُونِ ذَلِكَ هُمْ لَهَا عَامِلُونَ But their hearts in overwhelming ignorance of this record, and they have, besides that, other deeds which they are doing. As you may remember, dear listeners, in the previous verses, we spoke about the righteous and their characteristics, their competition towards doing righteous deeds. But this verse concerns the unbelievers again, whose actions differ from those of the righteous. And the Arabic word bal in the beginning of this verse, bal qulubuhum fi ghamra, means but, and it is used for the transition of the matter. The Arabic word ghamra, bal qulubuhum fi ghamra, but their hearts are in overwhelming ignorance, this word, as you heard, here it is translated as ignorance, but it means water that engulfs man. So we get the impression that they are immersed in ignorance, and this kind of ignorance penetrates their very souls. And since the statement of truth only influences those who are somehow awake and aware, the verse immediately adds, implying that the hearts of this group of obstinate infidels have sank so deeply in ignorance that they are heedless of the records of the deeds. On the day of reckoning and retribution, they will face and remember that. But now, they are ignorant of whatever the Holy Quran mentions about the divine promise. The verse says, بَلْ قُلُوبُهُمْ فِي غَمْرَةٍ مِّنْ هَذَا But their hearts are in overwhelming ignorance of this. هَذَا or the pronoun this, refers to the record talked about in the previous verses. To be overwhelmed by ignorance and unawareness does not let them see the truths clearly, which would have awoken their consciousness, and perhaps make them return to Allah. Interpreters have various opinions about the meaning of the rest of the verse, which says, وَلَهُمْ أَعْمَالٌ دُونَ ذَلِكَ And they have besides that, other deeds which they're doing. هُمْ لَهَا عَمِلُونَ Some say that it refers to the wrong deeds they do because of ignorance. And thus the word ذَلِك here is translated as that refers to their ignorance. The Arabic word أَعْمَال or deeds refers to the sins that they commit because of this very ignorance we talked about.
على مر الزمان تألقا وأضاء للدنيا طريقا
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
تعلقا وتلاه فيه
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly, the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran. By Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
Other commentators, however, say that this verse means that not only do they not believe in the true doctrine, but that they are also from the point of action very corrupt. Yet others say that the verse means that the program and conduct of the unbelievers are completely different from those of the believers. That's why they follow two different paths. In the final analysis, these apparently different interpretations are not inconsistent, and they can somehow be all reconciled with each other. What is important is that the source and cause of their evil deeds is the fact that their hearts are steeped in ignorance and unawareness, and they have somehow completely forgotten about the day of resurrection. So at first, the verse says قلوبهم, and then it says لهم أعمال. At first, their hearts and minds are misled, and then due to that, their deeds change. And worse than that is that they are consistent and they repeat their bad deeds, because the verse says لَهُمْ أَعْمَالٌ هُمْ لَهَا عَمِلُونَ. They continue doing this, they continue staying in that place. So here we get a fact that first, even the good person, even the righteous person, starts doing something bad against the ordinances of the Almighty Allah. Then, little by little, step by step, he gets accustomed to doing that act, and he will be misled. He will be captivated by that misconduct. Interestingly, the verse says, لَهُمْ أَعْمَال, they start doing some deeds, and then هُمْ لَهَا عَامِلُونَ. It is somehow that they are captivated, and they are the servants of these misconducts. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this program. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets, this life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Worked for me, worry, and this when faith begin.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Stand here so unafraid of everything around me. Proudly, I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way? All covered up in a world that gives it all away. Proudly, she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic law.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling, he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. With me, Muhammad Javad, hosting this program. And sitting in the studio along with me, Sheikh Javid, well, the dear guest speaker in this program, Islamic Laws. Welcome to the program, Sheikh Javid.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure is ours. Stay tuned. We'll be back. Let's focus on the laws of Homs. According to the leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Ayatollah Khamenei. Before that, let's take a listen to a short biography.
A little bit of background about Ayatollah Khamenei. He was born in 1939. When he began his Hawza studies, it took him 5.5 years to finish the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh. The standard time for studying the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh for an Iranian student that is not raised with the Arabic language is about 10 years. At the age of 18, he starts attending Bahthul Kharij. Bahthul Kharij, he starts it in Mashhad under Sayyid Hadi Milani. For 7 years straight, he was in Qom studying under Ayatollah Burujerdi, Imam Khomeini, the son of Ayatollah Ha'ari, who set up the Hawza in Qom, Sheikh Murtada Ha'ari, which was one of the top figures in Qom. Then he went back to Mashhad. For 4 years, he studied Kharij under Ayatollah Milani again. Speaking to some of those who knew Ayatollah Khamenei in Iran, when the issue of the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei came up, they said, we testify that he was a mujtahid not now, but in 1337, that's in the Iranian calendar, 1337, that's the first year that he started his Bahthul Kharij. He was teaching also. He had classes, he was teaching Makassas, some of the advanced classes in the Hawza, he was teaching that. 5 years before the actual movement started by Imam Khomeini, he was a mujtahid, according to that testimony. And when the movement of Imam Khomeini began, he was part of it, he was politically active, but he also was involved with his studies, as we said. Up till 1347, he was actively participating in Bahthul Kharij of Ayatollah Milani in Mashhad. And after he became the supreme leader, a little while after that, because he was requested a lot to start Bahthul Kharij, he started Bahthul Kharij and his teaching. One can very clearly testify that this man is no doubt one of the most just and adil scholars that would not, for any reason, for his children, for his family, for his personal benefit, for any party's benefit, for anything other than Allah, change his view and make a decision to go against what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said because of something like that.
So since we are talking about the laws of Homs, according to Ayatollah Khamenei, let me start off this episode with this question. Is it permissible for a person to give his Homs to a mujtahid or other than the one whom he follows?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, the mujtahid, a person or a duty-bound person, follows is supposed to be the most qualified, the most eligible, and the most learned of all mujtahids.
Mm-hmm.
And he is the person who should receive the religious dues, the khums or zakat, whatever. Okay. It's obligatory, therefore, to pay one's khums to the mujtahid one follows, not to a person who is not qualified or a person who is less learned or less eligible. Okay. Unless, of course, permitted by the mujtahid himself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because, for example, the duty-bound person, or what we call mukallaf,
mm-hmm.
in the eye of Islamic Sharia, does not have access to the mujtahid himself or to his representative. He can, with the permission of the mujtahid himself, give it to another scholar or another mujtahid. That has to be, of course, the permission has to be there.
Yes.
Otherwise, generally speaking, it's not permissible for a duty-bound person to give his khums dues, sahmi sadat or sahmi imam, to a scholar or a person who is not eligible and who is not a mujtahid, or maybe who is a mujtahid, but who is not a qualified mujtahid.
Uh-huh.
So he has to give it to his own mujtahid. Uh-huh. Otherwise, he will not be relieved of the obligation.
Yes. Okay. The other question being, at the end of one's khums year, is it possible or permissible for a person, for a duty bound, to, let's say, separate the khums from his profits? Because if I'm not mistaken, khums only applies to the surplus of the profits, right?
Sure.
So if is able to separate the khums from his profit and keep it for a short period, let's say for 2 weeks, until he pays it to the authorized attorney, is it permissible to do so?
Well, khums, as we know, and probably we have discussed it in the previous episodes as well, khums should be paid on the yearly gains and profit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It is not imaginable to separate khums from the profit. The profit is actually liable for khums. Khums should be paid on the profit,
mm-hmm.
not on the amount.
Not the asset.
The khums should be paid on the asset and the profit as well.
Okay.
You know? But sometimes, as for example, you pay your khums on a yearly basis. And you are a person who is actually committed to pay khums, who pays khums every year. Now you have a separate amount of money on which khums had been paid in the previous years, and there is the profit from which you have not paid khums. Okay, khums is not paid on the mukhammas amount. This is one thing. The mukhammas amount is the amount from which khums has already been paid, either in the previous year or in the year before the previous year, okay?
Yes.
So khums,
so the 1/5 tax has already been paid.
Yeah, it has already been paid. But khums should be paid on the yearly profit or on the annual income from which you have earned,
yes.
recently in the last 1 year, okay? And unless and until you pay khums from that profit, you cannot use that profit. you cannot use that money, because the whole amount of money as a whole, the money as a whole actually is something from which khums should be paid, and you cannot use or spend it unless you pay khums from that money. Just like
It's not halal to use the money.
Before paying khums from it. Uh-huh. Just like I want to give you the example of a shirt.
Yes.
As a clear example, you have not paid khums from the shirt you are wearing, and you cannot wear it during prayers because it's just like a usurped property, a usurped thing,
I see,
which you cannot wear during during
prayer. So the prayer is annulled, you mean, or void?
Yeah, the prayer is definitely affected according to the fatwa of Ayatollah Khamenei. Okay,
yes.
But we have to note that the scholars differ in their opinions regarding, for example, the example I gave you, the example of shirt. Ayatollah Sistani, for example, is of the view that you can use the shirt, but you are liable for the khums money, okay?
Yes.
And you cannot, of course, tear the shirt into five pieces or cut it into five pieces and give one piece as a khums. That's not possible, okay?
Yes.
So you are liable for the amount of khums in lieu of the shirt, because, for example, the shirt, let's consider a shirt which costs, let's say, $5,
mm-hmm.
$5, one fifth of the amount is khums.
Yes.
And you have to pay one fifth or $1 in order to be relieved of the obligation to pay khums.
I see.
As far as using the shirt is concerned, according to Ayatollah Sistani, you can pay khums, you can wear it even during prayers, but according to Ayatollah Khamenei, it's not permissible to wear the shirt even during prayers.
All right.
لا إله إلا الله والله أكبر.
The followers of Ayatollah Khamenei can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khamenei's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Is khums applicable to gifts? I mean, should we pay khums for the gifts we receive from friends or family members?
Okay. This is also a very important question. And, of course, many people are under the impression that khums should be paid from gifts, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the scholars differ in their opinions with regard to gifts, okay? These different scholars have different opinions in this regard, and we have to understand that the different fatwa, depending on who we follow, whether we follow Ayatollah Sistani or Ayatollah Khamenei, we have to note that Ayatollah Khamenei's fatwa is different from that of Ayatollah Sistani. Grand Ayatollah Khamenei is of the view that khums is not payable on gifts, okay? No matter what the gift is, whether it is in the form of a shirt or a dress or in the form of money, as long as it is a gift, khums is not paid on gifts. And this is the opinion of many other scholars like late Imam Khomeini, okay? And there are still people out there who continue to follow late Imam Khomeini, may his soul rest in peace. As for those people who follow Ayatollah Sistani and his line of thinking, of course, he is of the view that khums should be paid from gifts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, gifts, if they are not used, this is very important, a very important condition, because if you use the gift within the first year, from the time you receive it,
yes,
khums is not payable on it.
Mm-hmm.
But if it remains unused, for a whole year, khums should be paid. Like, for example, there are many, brides and grooms,
yes,
who receive gifts from their
like
clothes.
Baby showers, for example.
Sure. Yeah. Very good example. They receive gifts from their friends and relatives, and these gifts remain in the, for example, in the bride's house,
yes,
for, let's say, for months,
already
that
years,
the
yes.
bride does not know that she has gifts
mm-hmm.
which
yes.
she hasn't used at all.
Exactly.
And the same is true with the groom. And if those gifts remain unused for a whole year, according to Ayatollah Sistani, she should pay khums for him. And it's sufficient to use that gift for a short time.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if you have a gold bangle,
yes.
a gold bangle, you use it for 2 days or for 1 day,
mm-hmm.
okay, with the intention or of as an ornament, as
yes.
an ornament. It is sufficient, and then khums will never be payable on
uh-huh.
that bangle
I
for
see.
A short time. It's not necessary to wear it throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout the year,
I see.
But those fellows and those Shia brothers and sisters who follow Grand Ayatollah Khamenei, of course, according to His Eminence, khums is not payable on gifts, no matter how long the gift remains unused.
All right. Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. That was the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. Thank you very much for listening to us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Turkish farmer hails the miraculous survival of two baby goats from deadly wildfires. Sergeant Bayat said seeing his livestock threatened by flames was the most difficult moment in his life. Bayat said although he lost 8 of his animals in the fire, he found new life after the survival of a newborn goat. He said the mother of the kid had been killed in a wildfire. Bayat called it a miracle. But there was also another baby goat.
We found another goat amidst the wildfire. She has a baby. There you go. Miracle number 2.
Bayat says although his farm was severely damaged, he's now over the moon at the survival of the baby goats. The massive forest fire in southern Turkey broke out on Wednesday, fueled by strong winds. Wildfires are common in southern Turkey in the summer, but local authorities say the latest fires have covered a much bigger area. Last year, a powerful explosion in Beirut turned life around for thousands of Lebanese. Now, a number of people have decided to build a monument in honor of the victims of the terrible accident. 27 individuals and organizations have pulled their efforts to build a giant 25-meter sculpture at a site of last August's explosion. The artwork is called Gesture and is made out of reclaimed metal debris. It looks like it's handing a flower to the city of Beirut. When completed, Gesture will also have a water and light installation. The project was conceived and designed by Nadim Karam, one of Lebanon's most celebrated artists.
Cats are notoriously volatile animals, as we all know. One moment they are purring for your attention, and the next they can't stand being touched. Now, a Canadian firm has come up with an app that can help you better understand your feline friends. The app is called Tabby and works with artificial intelligence. The AI's algorithm was trained at a clinic in the city of Calgary. The developers of Tabby hope their product can be useful for novice cat owners and vets alike. The app can also help monitor the health of cats. Tabby's developer explains how the app functions.
It uses artificial intelligence, so specifically machine learning, and it's coupled with the feline grimace scale. And what the feline grimace scale is, it's a way for humans to be able to determine if a cat is in pain or not based on the ear positioning, the eye positioning, the muzzle, whiskers, things like that. And so we were able to train a machine using machine learning and a series of images to be able to make that determination. So if you're somebody who has a cat but you don't have that training, you can just use the app and it can help you determine how your cat is doing.
Sounds very useful. The Tavli is not perfect though and runs into problems when trying to decipher the mood of black cats. Despite the hiccups, the developers say the program will get better at doing its task as its artificial intelligence develops through practice. Humans have damaged the environment perhaps more than any other species, but there are always some who go out of their way to help animals in distress. Known in Cyprus as Birdman, 28-year-old Konstantinos Antonio is a wildlife veterinarian. Every year he saves hundreds of sick or wounded wild birds. The animals brought to him are usually found by regular people. Konstantinos says climate change has made the task of assisting birds more urgent as their survival becomes harder and harder. The Cypriot environmentalist usually frees the animals after treatment in the presence of other people in order to raise awareness about the issue. A vertical forest has transformed the Chinese megacity of Chengdu into a concrete jungle, making the lives of the residents greener. Each unit at the 8-tower complex has a balcony with around 20 types of luxuriant plants and greenery. The green space filters air and noise pollution while creating a spectacular view. The project in the southwestern city was completed in 2018, and all of the 826 apartments were sold out at the time.
I think it's quite good. The air quality is pretty good and much better than my old houses. The air is good when you wake up in the morning, and the green trees are good for us elderly people. They are good for our eyes.
Besides all the benefits, the apartments have a major problem. They have been overrun by plants and invaded by mosquitoes. The issue has forced some of the occupants to move out. Other cities around the world, such as New York and Copenhagen, have also launched similar green housing projects.
The best visited multimedia exhibit in the world known as Van Gogh Life. The experience has opened in Munich after being postponed a number of times due to COVID-19.
Van Gogh is just the most famous artist in the world. He is also a prototype artist. He is the last artist who then tragically dies at the end. His life story was just fascinating, and that's why he is Van Gogh. And of course, his artworks are fascinating.
Featuring some of Van Gogh's best-known works, the exhibition is not only a feast for the eyes, but the senses with music and smells to accompany the colorful projections. The exhibit is supposed to smell like the countryside because of where Van Gogh lived. However, the organizers say visitors cannot really experience the feeling due to wearing masks. Van Gogh Alive, the experience was first presented in Singapore in 2011. Since then, the multimedia exhibit has been seen in 70 cities and has attracted some 6 million visitors. Conservation measures have managed to bring the world's most endangered cat back from the brink of extinction. In 2002, there were less than 100 Iberian lynx left in the wild. The situation prompted officials in Spain and Portugal to save the animal through a captive breeding program. They also tried hard to fight poaching and reintroduce rabbits, the cat's major prey, into the wild. By the end of 2020, there were over 1,100 Iberian lynx living in the two countries, most of them in Spain's southern region of Andalusia.
The main cause of death for wildlife, certainly in the natural environment, is related to human activities, roadkill, poaching, unwanted encounters. So the less interaction they have with humans, the better.
Despite the successful measures, the International Union for Conservation of Nature still lists the animal as endangered. It's estimated that the species will be out of danger only when its population surpasses 3,000. Urban development, hunting, and roadkill are the major reasons of death for wild lynxes these days. Brazilians have come up with a creative idea to combat population, that is pollution and global warming, repopulating mangroves. The project is aimed at reforesting an area equal to 75 football fields in Guanabara Bay. Organizers hope to make the biggest mangrove garden in a country. Mangroves, which usually grow in tropical regions, are essential to maintaining water quality and clarity. They filter and trap sediments, heavy metals, and other pollutants. Mangrove forests are also able to store 3 to 4 times more carbon than other forests.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
A mesmerizing hot air balloon festival has got on the way in the U.S. state of New Jersey. The sky was littered with nearly 100 beautifully colored hot air balloons in different shapes, captivating every viewer. The awe-inspiring event brought together COVID-wary citizens to experience joy and jubilation amid health restrictions. Pleasant weather made the experience all the more enjoyable. The 38th annual New Jersey Lottery Festival of Ballooning is likely the largest outdoor entertainment event in the tri-state area since the pandemic began.
Nostalgia is in the air in Paris as the streets of the city are enlivened, that is, with old vehicles. The French capital has hosted an annual parade called Summer Crossing of Paris. It brought together over 700 vintage cars, motorbikes, buses, and tractors from all over Europe. The route started from a Vincennes castle east of Paris and ended in the southwest of the city. Drivers crossed the iconic monuments such as the Eiffel Tower and the Arc de Triomphe.
It is extraordinary because the automobile industry heritage and the Parisian architectural heritage, which is obviously absolutely fabulous, echo each other. We are driving through all of Paris's most beautiful squares.
The 14th version of the event drew hundreds of enthusiastic visitors from across France. People were asked to wear masks and keep social distancing because of COVID-19. Tehran municipality has inaugurated an art garden that puts on display Iran's art and culture. As Youssef Jalali reports, the cultural facility aims to reconnect visitors with Iran's rich past amid increasing preoccupation with modern lives.
Sit back and enjoy the beauty of Iran's ancient culture. In Kushk Art Garden, located in the heart of Tehran, visitors get to learn about Iran's music, literature, painting and calligraphy, far from the hustle and bustle of modern life. Kushk hosts Iranian artists who create masterpieces that have their roots in thousands of years ago.
Miniature painting has been around in Iran since thousands of years ago. In miniature, we paint flat images with a myriad of details. We avoid adding shades to make it as flat as possible, since in the past, Iranians believed that divine light gives shape to everything.
Metal engraving first stepped into existence 7,000 years ago in Iran. It is the art of incising decorations and metals. In this workshop, I will be available every day for visitors to see how I can turn metals into beautiful handicraft.
Kushk is part of a bigger project dubbed Art Garden. The cultural complex consists of an art lake, poem and literature house, music house, and Kushk Garden, each trying to promote an aspect of Iran's culture. Tehran municipality says it inaugurated the peaceful place, for it says cultural identity has been overshadowed by modern technology.
This precious place was a much-needed initiative to preserve the Iranian art and culture. As time goes by, technology gets more and more intertwined with our daily lives, and our genuine culture slips into oblivion. We need to have such cultural centers that safeguard our cultural heritage.
The Art Garden is situated on Abbasabad Hills in downtown Tehran. In recent years, the area has turned into a tourist attraction that houses structures that combine modern technology with ancient culture, such as this large pedestrian overpass called Tabiat Bridge, and the Middle East's largest planetarium, dubbed Mina Dome.
Kushk will be the last piece of Tehran's art garden, and will be a hotspot for a range of cultural activities, all aiming to revive the ancient Iranian art and culture, which experts believe have become a lost piece in today's hectic life. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Palazzo Farnese is one of the most famous palaces in Rome and is being used as the French embassy. However, some of the rooms there are not open to the public. Now, an artist has come up with a creative way to show the historic building to everyone. An Italian artist known as JR has created a mural art installation on the French diplomatic mission in Rome. The artwork is equivalent to a virtual hole and shows what the building would look like if there were no outside walls. JR has conducted similar dazzling projects on other buildings, including a mural in the city of Florence, providing people with a sneak view of architectural masterpieces.
There is a famous quote, one should always try to turn every disaster into an opportunity. A Swiss hiker with Parkinson's disease has put that saying into practice by hiking more than 1,100 kilometers across the Alps. Yves Aubusson, suffering from the disease for more than 16 years, completed the challenge in less than 100 days last year. During his journey, he scaled high-altitude peaks and crossed nearly 100 mountain passes. Aubusson says his first goal was to inspire fellow patients to be active even if they are gravely affected by the incurable disease. But he says his major motivation was to raise awareness of the debilitating neurological illness, which is little known.
What motivated me to do this hike is that I wanted people to know better this disease that is so little known. So I did something that I think was important and that maybe people will relate to. The fact that I did this hike, some people understood it more than I hoped. It went beyond our hopes.
The 52-year-old hiker, previously a professional golfer, is now planning for a new challenge that includes a bike and a tricycle. But he believes that if he could encourage other patients to do sports, he will definitely win his challenge.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Answering the doubts and questions, and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah, who is Ar-Rahman? Allah, who is Al-Mannan? La ilaha illallah.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Assalamu alaikum rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. This is your host, Musa al-Bahadili, coming to you from your program, Q&A on Islamic Beliefs, broadcasting to you, as usual, from IRIB English Radio. Joining us in the studio today is our dear friend and esteemed guest, Sheikh Murtada Karim, who is a researcher at the Islamic Seminary of Qum. Dear Sheikh, assalamu alaikum rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, and thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us, dear Sheikh. Dear Sheikh, today's topic is quite relevant, especially today when we have an imam who is in occultation. And the question is as follows. We know that in Islam and as Shia Muslims, we believe that following the orders, or just generally following a person who is not an imam, who is not an infallible imam, in every case is not legal. It is not Islamically lawful. And to this extent, we have a narration from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam saying, إِيَّاكَ أَن تَنْصَبَ رَجَلًا دُونَ الْحُجَّةِ فَتُصَدِّقَهُ فِي كُلِّ مَا قَالَ, saying that do not, or be wary of following a man who is not the Hujjah. And Hujjah here we interpret it as being the Imam. Then you believe him in everything he says. So following this logic, dear Sheikh, we cannot then choose a leader or follow a leader who is not an infallible imam. And here is the natural question. We believe in the wilayatul faqih, the leadership of the most knowledgeable scholar in Iran, for example, and in other places. How then can we gather between these two narrations? That says we can only follow an infallible imam, and then we turn around and believe in a leader who is not an infallible imam? Please elaborate for us, dear Sheikh.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. The first part of the question, as you mentioned, is that following a person who is not infallible is not allowed. I believe that this cannot be accepted for all the cases. For example, we are talking about the religion of Islam. In the Battle of Badr, for example, the Holy Prophet chooses some commanders.
Right.
And under some soldiers fighting under these commanders. Now the question is that during the war, should the commands of those commanders be followed by the soldiers or not? In the Battle of Karbala, for example, Imam Hussein alayhi salam has chosen Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas as a commander. Should his commands be obeyed by other companions of Imam Hussein alayhi salam or not?
Right.
I think the answer is positive.
It's pretty obvious. They should follow.
At least during the war, the commands of the people introduced by an infallible person like the Prophet and Imam Hussein alayhi salam should be obeyed by others. So the first part of the question reads, following a person who is not infallible is not allowed. The answer is that this is not necessary and the case in all the cases. We have some examples when especially a person introduced by the Prophet, by the Imam, by an infallible, and he mentions that you need to follow him in these issues. For example, when it comes to issues related to war, for example. So this is the first point. The second point is an analysis of this narration which has been quoted in by Sheikh Kulaini in Al-Kafi. First of all, when it comes to the chain of the narration, it's not an authentic chain. But let's forget about the chain and analyze the content. The understanding of those people who have referred to this narration to talk against the concept of wilayat al-faqih is absolutely wrong. They did not understand the narration. Let me read for you the whole narration. Abu Hamza Thumali, the great companion of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, says that Imam Sadiq alayhi salam told me that إِيَّاكَ أَن تَطَعَ أَعْقَابَ الرِّجَالِ, meaning that be a way to follow the men, to accept whatever all the men say. قال قلت جعلت فداك. Abu Hamza says that I told the Imam, أما أعقاب الرجال فما ثلث ما في يدي إلا مما وطئت أعقاب الرجال. Interestingly, he says that my knowledge, two-thirds of it comes from those people who have narrated narrations from you or the previous imam. They are among these rijal. They are not infallible.
Right.
So this is the question of Abu Hamza Thumali. If you mean that I need only to accept whatever I hear from an infallible imam, this is not possible. فَمَا ثُلُثَ مَا فِي يَدَيْهِ Two-thirds of what I know is what I have heard from other people who have narrated from you or other imams.
Exactly, yes.
Maybe this is also the understanding of some of those people who have used this narration to reject the concept of wilayat faqih.
They use the same logic here,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah. And the imam explains that فَقَالَ لِي Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam told me لَيْسَ هَيْثُ تَذْهَبْ. This is not the true understanding of what I meant. إِيَّاكَ أَن تَنْصِبَ رَجُلًا دُونَ الْحُجَّةِ فَتُصَدِّقَهُ فِي كُلِّ مَقَالٍ. Now, دُونَ الْحُجَّةِ, some people, these people, they have understood the narration as referring to those people who are not حُجَّة, who are not
right.
Imam. But this is not, this is wrong. أن تنصب رجلا دون الحجة دون الحجة means without a proof.
Exactly, without evidence.
Without evidence, an evidence. So Imam says that be away from appointing a person to accept whatever he says without any reason, without any proof, and accept whatever he is telling you. What does Imam mean? Imam is, O Abu Hamza, O Abu Hamza. If you hear a narration from Zurara, who is quoting me, then you are accepting the narration of Zurara with a hujjah. You have a proof because I have already told you that you can hear from Zurara, or you know that Zurara is a trustworthy person. So you have a hujjah. You
have
a proof.
Argument, that proof, evidence that
yeah,
supports
on the day of judgment,
this, yes.
If Allah asks you, why did you act upon the sayings of Zurara, you know, you... I mean, argue that he was a trustworthy person. He quoted from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. So, dun al hujja in this narration means acting without proof. It doesn't mean choosing a person who is not hujja.
Right.
It is a wrong understanding of the narration. So, when we understand this narration in a true sense of the word, it means that we should not follow a person and act upon his sayings if we do not have any proof, any hujjah. Is it the case for wilayat faqih? Exactly, the point is that for wilayat faqih, we have enough proofs and hujjah from the narrations of the Imams of the Ahlul Bayt, from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam himself and other Imams of the Ahlul Bayt, who have told us that during the major occultation, you need to follow what we call it today, wali al-faqih, the jurist, the most knowledgeable jurists who are pious, and so on and so forth. Let me, it's not that, it's not the place to discuss about the concept of wali al-faqih, but just to mention and clarify that we have...
Right. Because it is another topic with its own philosophy and
yeah.
Evidence and arguments. Yes.
Just to mention that following a wali faqih is based on some proof and hujjah. I mentioned a few narrations, famous narrations in this regard.
Please do.
For example, Imam al-Askari alayhi salam is quoted as saying the famous narration that فَأَمَّا مَنْ كَانَ مِنَ الْفُقَهَاءِ, those jurists who are the protectors and guardians of the religion, of Islam, they are away from committing sins, they are against following their vain desires, then other people need to follow them. Imam, this is in Bihar al-Anwar, volume 2, page 88. Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam, the same imam that this narration was quoted from, he says that a person who rejects the verdict of such a person that I mentioned, this
jurist
who might be al-Wali faqih, it is as if he is rejecting me. He is rejecting us, the Ahlul Bayt. And those who reject us, it is as if they are rejecting Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
To that extent, mashallah.
Al-Kafi, volume 1, page 67. And many other narrations which are mentioned, dear listeners who want to know about the concept of wilayat faqih, they can search. And there are many narrations mentioned by, the Imams of the Ahlul Bayt, advising the people, encouraging the people to refer to the jurists, the knowledgeable ones, the men of piety, and during the major occultation, and follow them.
Exactly. So in addition to that, when the 12th Imam, Imam al-Hujjah, he went into occultation, the first time he went into occultation, he had four deputies
yeah.
who acted on behalf of him. So it is not a concept that we have invented recently, an innovation, as some people say, it's a bid'ah.
And interestingly, for example, at the time of Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam, we see that, and the other Imam, they have some special companions, great companions. For example, let me mention a person, a great companion of the Imam called Aban ibn Taghlib. Imam alayhi salam tells Aban ibn Taghlib that it is not the time of the occultation, the Imam is present. But Imam says to Aban ibn Taghlib that seat in the mosque, the city of Medina, Masjid al-Nabi, and after give fatwa to the people. So those people who refer to Aban ibn Taghlib, now they have a hujjah and proof. Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam has introduced you to us. So if we follow what you mentioned, it means that we are following Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam. And this companion is so great that even Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam says that you can give fatwa. It doesn't mean that he has his own fatwas. He means that his knowledge is so great that whatever he's telling the people, it is like...
It's in accordance with what I would say.
Exactly. So when we say that we need to follow Waliyyah Faqih, it is because of the fact that the infallible Imam, they have told us to do so. So following Waliyyah Faqih means in our time and era following an infallible Imam, because the infallible Imam, Imam al-Sadiq, Imam al-Askari, and Imam al-Mahdi alayhi salam himself, I believe in his letter to Ali ibn Muhammad Samuri, his last deputy, mentions this point as well. Also, we have a tawqif from Imam al-Mahdi alayhi salam referring to that. So it is not an tansiba rajulan dun al-hujjah. No, if we
that's not the meaning of it.
Yeah, if you are following today's Waliyyah Faqih, it is with hujjah, with proof, and I only mentioned some of these proofs in our narrations. Let me also introduce a book. You know that, again, let me refer to the fact that the concept of Waliyyah Faqih, as you rightly mentioned, is not an innovated concept. It's been mentioned in the narrations, and some of the Shia scholars during the history, they have mentioned this topic in their books. Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi, he has a very comprehensive book known as Walayatul Faqih. In it, he has discussed about the concept of Walayatul Faqih. He has gathered all the narrations. And the point is that many Shia scholars believe that following a Waliyyah Faqih is not only proved through the verses and narrations. Rather, we have intellectual arguments which tell us that we need to follow a marji' taqlid. So we should not think that the proof, the hujjah that we have is limited to these narrations. According to great Shia scholars, we have also intellectual argument and hujjah and proof. So our dear listeners can search about this topic and find more about the intellectual arguments for this as well.
We can also put this in, paint this picture in another way, because when we say Waliyyah al-Faqih, we maybe perhaps do not understand exactly what a Waliyyah al-Faqih is, but for example, imagine this. Say that the Waliyyah al-Faqih is a researcher in a field, in medicine, for example, and he is the most leading researcher in the field. Naturally, a layman, a normal person, would follow the most knowledgeable. The other researchers would also follow the most knowledgeable of them. So it's the same concept.
Exactly.
You just follow the most knowledgeable person.
Very
it is not something out of this world. Right, Sheikh?
Yeah,
would this interpretation be correct?
Yeah, exactly.
And also the book that you mentioned, Wilayatul Faqih by Imam Khomeini, may he rest in peace, is available in English and also on the internet, of course.
Yes.
Dear Sheikh, I must end the discussion for today. Yet again, this has been your host, Musa Al-Bahadali, coming to you from your program, Q&A on Islamic Beliefs, broadcasting to you from IRIB English Radio. Thank you for tuning in.
Inna fil jannati nahran laban.
إن في الجنة نهرا لبن علي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين.